Our first speaker, Eva, will tell us about her work with children in playgrounds, where through creativity and cooperation, human rights learnings are experienced. She will also share her idea of peace playgrounds as a space for rich learning in human rights. Now, Eva has experience in many fields: literature, cultural studies, ethno-political issues, peace education, and her presentation will reflect these wide-ranging interests. I think I'm going to introduce all three speakers at this time and then let them just proceed. So Gloria will be our second speaker, and her work focuses on teachers in Mexico in the area of human rights and children's rights. And she believes that you cannot give something that you do not have yourself. I'm quoting from the book. Thus, her efforts have been to give support to teachers with a holistic approach to peace education, which includes looking at their own beliefs and practices so that they are able to walk the talk and practice what they preach with regards to human rights and children's rights. And she does this with teachers who are in the classroom. Gloria has taught elementary school in Mexico for many years and worked in teacher education. And she is currently finishing a master's program in Spain in peace, conflict, and development studies. Our third speaker, Bernard Kergat, is senior human rights officer at the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. He is in charge of human rights education and capacity building programs. He too has been a teacher in high school, a curriculum developer, and lecturer at teacher training colleges. His presentation will focus on policy and implementation of human rights for young people. He will address challenges of implementing policies which are in conflict with traditional cultures and values in this country, such as female circumcision and compulsory school attendance. We have a rich morning ahead of us, and as you may know, tomorrow we will be visiting an orphanage and we'll be thinking about children's programs. So it makes sense for us to be grappling today with approaches to bringing human rights and children's rights to the lives of young people. And as we did yesterday, each speaker will have 15 minutes to speak. Then we will have time for forming small groups, 3, 4. We don't want them much larger so that we all get a chance to participate. And we will have questions from each group. I will say more about that after the speakers. So let us begin. Eva.
I've never been the first lady in my life. So it is so rewarding to be here among this community of playful and wonderful people with a good sense of humor, and I feel it's so rewarding to be here, and I'm so grateful to you, to Tony, to Betty, to Janet, to Eva, to offer me this possibility to be here. And you probably remember the presentation, Tony's presentation yesterday, and I had an immediate reaction in the break to her presentation, and she reminded me not to forget. She mentioned about many animals, but this reminded me to a special animal that she didn't mention. It was a party animal. So thank you again. Thank you again. And I'm very, very grateful to you all, and I'm especially grateful to Eva, who introduced me to this peace studies, and I'm working with her for ages, and she encouraged me to publish probably some of you are familiar with this book, and she also encouraged me to have this presentation. And I'm also grateful to her because she, in her presentation, she set up checklist of problems about Hungary, so I have some reference points to refer, and I don't need much explanation why human rights and why peace studies is so important in Hungary. We are living in a very deeply divided society. We are in a crisis, and we are divided around ethnic lines, especially on party lines. We have racism here, we have intolerance, and we have corruption. And all these to have peace studies is so important, therefore. So this made me think about my project idea, which at this moment is only a project idea, it's only a vision. But I'm not a sophisticated person who has only ideas in an ivory tower, so I would like to implement my project ideas, and I do have a hope that at some point these ideas will become a reality and in practice. So let me start with some slides. These photos are taken from my neighborhood. These are playgrounds. And these are, you don't realize that these are playgrounds because they are surrounded by fence, and you see here the security. And this all raises all kinds of problems, that how can children have spiritual comfort in such a small area, and when you are restricted and restricted, and there is no space for them to play. This is another couple of hundred meters, again another playground. So what do you see here is the similarity between these two different playgrounds, that they are surrounded by a fence, they are small, and they have this uniform idea, you know, this so-called Euro-conform playgrounds. Perhaps this is something good, because this is an achievement, because this was an ugly place before. But if you go at a deeper level, the vision you have about playground and playing has nothing to do with this kind of environment. So my idea is a different kind of playground, and I would like to combine this with the playground idea with peace education and human rights education. So I would start with why human rights and the peace education for children and playground. Perhaps because our society is not so open for these kind of things, and this is a very hard thing to introduce among formal education framework, peace education and human rights education. And the idea behind is also that you have to find yourself an informal framework. And because we live in a very deeply divided society, when division along political lines, left and right, and this and that, creates enmity not among party affiliation, but only in community. It's divided along political lines of communities, and also this division is penetrated in friendships and in family. So the idea behind is that when you bring your children to a common space, perhaps this common space has a spiritual comfort. This perhaps it will help you forget about this division. So this is the project idea I have in mind. And what I have in mind is also more related to another kind of playground with another aspect, another shape, another look, something more close to this kind of playground. This playground is made, this is an already existing playground. It's not a vision, it's already here in Hungary, and this was designed by a friend of mine who is an artist. He also has, his name is János Sándor, he lives in Fót, and tomorrow's visit we'll go to Fót, but this playground is not in Fót, it is in Hódmezővásárhely, another part of Hungary, but he won the competition and he created this idea, and it's wood and it's unique and he uses many different symbols, and later I will speak about what kind of values I consider that are, what kind of ideas are important for me to be incorporated in a project idea like this. And as you can see, he tried to make it in such a way that children who have wheelchairs can enter, and it's easy to access, and it's not it's more loose and more human shape. And now we are at the at the core of the question: why is so unique and so specific this playground idea? I would like to incorporate from the very beginning five different values which I consider very important for a kind of approach. I told you about this division, that we are in a deeply divided society. So community building aspect is a very, very important aspect in my vision. That what I mean by community aspect, community building aspect, even projects and application are used to divide people. So if somebody wins EU project, it creates many times an enmity. Who is the winner and the other loses? So I would like that this playground would be conceived with the contribution of the community. So those who are selling in the community, like in Fort, for instance, ice cream, they should contribute with 1 cent each. The baker should contribute with 1 cent, and the others. So I would like to involve entrepreneurs and community, and I would like to encourage them to think about what kind of playground they would like to have, what is best suited for this community. And you may remember the first slide. This place where I live is a multicultural environment, but you can't see Roma children playing in this playground. This playground I've shown you before in the first four slides, they are nice, but there is never written that Roma children are not allowed to enter there. But there is a hidden gate, I think, in the heart and in the minds of the people, that somehow hinder Roma children who are in the neighborhood to enter. Perhaps it's not encouraging them because they don't feel that warmth, or it's not encouraging for them. They are symbols of another world. So that's why I think that inclusiveness should be an important aspect of this kind of playground. And secondly, I think it's very important to have a playground which environmentally safe and harm safe aspect, to incorporate this aspect. Environmentally safe, what I mean, that to use environmentally friendly equipment in building, wood and warm things, and paint that is not harmful to the environment, and to take care that people, children and adults who are going there are in safe environment. They cannot be hurt, and they can get to that place safely. If you put in a place where they are can be run by cars or they are exposed to danger, then it's not environmentally safe. So the other aspect is that cultural tradition should be incorporated and should be open toward the universal symbol and other value symbols also. So what you have here, it's incorporating all these traditions, the wood from Transylvania and the sun, which is not only a Hungarian Transylvanian symbol, but it's a universal symbol. And I told you about the sensitivity towards challenge children, possibility to write, to use wheelchairs and creating a special surface with braille writing. Here, you this is not with braille writing, but this already implies the idea that it's possible to use a such surface where to teach human rights, for instance. Perhaps you can use some excerpts from the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, so people meet every day these very important ideas. And the last one, the aspect of learning through creativity and playing. So I would like to build a series of seminars and different programs around this playground. From time to time you can use to educate, other times it is just a simple place where people go and play. But in other times you can invite pedagogies and artists and children involvement. So this kind of playground I have in mind. So because there's not too much time to speak, 3 more minutes, that I will run through all these things. So what I have in mind, what will be the contribution of this kind of playground, a broad goal for an overall change, empowering local commitment and action, fighting back exclusive practices, create a climate of acceptance. And specific objective for change, integration, human rights. This is very important also, but to start with this playground, and if you are successful and you create a positive practice, maybe the community will think that how to make an influence, an impact on decision makers at local government level, and then later on national level, how to incorporate all these ideas into current educational frameworks. So the impact I expect to have a greater self-esteem. So if you are bringing children there, let's say challenge and Roma children there, Roma children are very gifted in singing and dancing, so a playground is a very good place to raise their self-esteem. And you can set up a ground rules that in this peaceful environment, this so-called peace zone, this playground, singling out comments will not be heard, and so on. And how can I achieve all these goals? By inspiring play. And so I would like to involve artists from different fields, from dance to singing to different domain. And who will be the beneficiaries of this? Children, Roma children, teachers, parents, and the whole community, I think, in the long run. And what are the opportunities for change, and how can we utilize them? In terms of impact on young people, I briefly mentioned about these things. In terms of impact on the immediate conflict, and changing teaching and learning practices. of course, when you have this project ideas, when it is only an idea, it's only a vision, and you are maybe too idealistic about it, you have all kind of risks. That it's a risk that you cannot implement. It will become only a project idea. But you have to think about how to overcome this risk. So there are a couple of things that may hinder you to carry out all these ideas. But if you develop a strategy, you might have a chance to overcome this risk. So you have the risk of skepticism. No, but perhaps it is so unusual, and people don't think that this is you can carry it out. Teachers are not teachers are afraid that this is something new and extra burden. But you develop a kind of strategy, and you brief the community, and you tell about the long run benefits of it. Maybe you will have. So instead of concluding remarks, since I don't have time to tell my concluding remarks, I will use a quotation. The use of playing. So I'm using this from David Amiller. What did you do today? I played. Why did you play? I just played. Why did you do that? Just for fun. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ava, for your creative thoughts on a new kind of playground. Now we'll turn to Gloria from Mexico, who will talk to us about her work with teachers.
Good morning. I want to start by saying that for me this is a great opportunity to create a meeting space. A space where together we can view a new way to see and practice this education. I'm a teacher. I'm so proud to be teacher. I love to be teacher. And a few years ago, I started to study this education, and more to study, to try to practice. And for me, this is a really great opportunity, because it's something I can understand. It's like maybe we can speak a piece, about peace education, but not everybody understands the same thing about peace education. And I think this space is a really great opportunity to start to share what does mean peace education for us. And to more than say something is good or bad, maybe we can build together a new purpose and a new kind of peace education that we can go for the same goal. The title of my presentation is "You Cannot Give Something You Don't Have," and incorporating rights of the children into the teacher training education in Mexico. First, I want to show a short background about Mexico. The human rights in Mexico, the Mexico Constitution established a number of important individual guarantees, many of which reflect the human rights enshrined in the international human rights treaties, such as the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the American Convention on Human Rights. In 2004, the government inaugurated the National Human Rights, and after this part, started to incorporate the human rights in the education, in the program, in the official part. After that, I start to build together NGOs, schools, official part of the Minister of Education to try to integrate the human rights, not only in a conceptual way, to try to put it in the program, in the official program. In 2004, I start to make a reform in secondary school. It's more than the high school, after the elementary school, and start to change the program and integrate the subject that is called civic and ethical formation. And in the beginning, that was like I incorporate 3 grades, like in the first, second, and third grade, you can find the civic and ethical formation in the high school, in the secondary school. In the beginning, the human right was integrated in the last year only like a concept. You can find the declaration, and that's all, but it was integrated. In 2 years ago, I started to change again, and in the civic and ethical formation take 1 year. Now it's not 3rd year, it's only 2 years. I started the 2nd year and the 3rd grade, and continue like a concept. You can find the human right declaration in the 3rd grade, only like a concept, but it's in there. And last year, in elementary school, we started a new reform to start to work with human rights and the rights of the kids. It's appeared in the free text that we have in Mexico, that is given for all the kids in all the republic. And you can find the declaration of the kids, the rights of the kids. It's in all the books. And now it's integrated peace education. It's a really big step because like 5 years before, it was only like a program of peace education, but it was an option. The school which wants to take it can follow that program. The school which doesn't want is like optional. Now last year it started like an experiment to try to integrate peace education like a part of the program of civic and ethical formation. And it's like a way, like a cross-curricular, but that's the reason that I say not all the person which speak about peace education understand the same. Because when you read the program about peace education in Mexico now in these 6 years, you can find that they only take the part of the solving conflict in no other ways. This is the only aspect that they put it, that we have to teach the kids how to solve the conflict, how they make this solution in no violent way, but not all the huge point of view that peace education can offer. But I think it's a really important step that started in Mexico. It doesn't have any evaluation, it started like last year. It's not now in all the school. The book started to print it. It's not already in all the years, but it's now in Mexico. I want to share with you this part. This is the second part that I want to show you. Now we know more or less what happened in Mexico, like in a formal education. Like I say, I'm a teacher. And sometimes we hear like with the partner that it's so difficult to work with that, because we feel sometimes peace education is something that is outside. Or some experts say, hey, you have to give a peace education. And like a teacher, sometimes you feel like you have to do everything. You have to teach ecological team. You have to teach how to solve the conflicts. You have to make a critical case. You have to think that you feel like, okay, I'm going to take note and I'll do it. I was working in a soil risk zone that is called Tepito in Mexico City. And that zone is like a red zone. And I was working there for 4 years. And I can say that I learned too much, not only like a teacher, I learned too much like a human being. And there is like a part that comes on the person which work with narcotraffic, would work in an illegal way. And I have the son of that kind of family. And when I have to teach these rights, and I have to teach a peace education, it is a really contrast things. And I have to see that more than peace education be an obligation, give me a lot of answers. And for me, more like a something that an expert told me that I have to do, it was a way that I can be or try to be a best human being. That's for me, peace education, no, it's a model. For me, it's a lifestyle. Because you cannot give that something that you don't have. I cannot say to my kids to be honest if I'm not being honest. I cannot say, please, solve your conflict speaking if I don't speak with them. This is like the principal aportation for me, peace education. And I try now to study the Master of the Peace in between conflict and development in Spain and in Austria, I had the big opportunity to start to read so important persons, which give us like the name of the things that I practice. And for me, it was like, wow, I'm not alone in this world. Because really, sometimes when you are like a peace education, you believe that like you are a dreamer. Maybe I imagine these things. But when you find some other person put the name as you are, wow, I'm not alone. Somebody else believed the same things and have a name. When I start to see the peace education and find the holistic peace and the holistic point of view from what I got, wow, we can do something. I cannot be paralyzed, because this is the point. When you are a teacher and you are in a classroom day after day, the quotidianity comes to reality, and it's so difficult sometimes to go out or beyond that. And when you see that you have many other options, you can start to move, and I think this is an important movement, start to move one to others. And holistic peace is so interesting because it offers to you a new kind of paradigm, a new way to see the world. And when I see the support, it was a physics, a quantum physics, wow, I was so surprised. I said, how the quantum physics explain the holistic and the holistic point of view? And Capra say, because you have to see the world in a new way, not in a fragment part, in a particular part, in a holistic part, in a whole. Wow, amazing. How I can explain these things? And one say that the quotidian physics or the mechanical physics say that you, to understand the whole, you have to put the parts, no? And when you take a picture, it's like the pins make like the complete picture, no? But in the holistic point of view, you see the hologram. And you say, well, how you can see the hologram, no? And I understand, let's say that if you see in a hologram a tree and you project the laser of the hologram, if you put something through the laser, you are going to see again the complete tree. It means that in the whole is the part, in the part is in the whole. And for me, it was like a so really interesting experience to try to see that we are part of the whole. It means like everybody that is here, we can come from a so complete peace education. I try to understand what we can do in a practice. I'm so practical, so sorry, but in a practical way, I find that it's so important to integrate in a peace education an internal peace. Really, it's not too easy to speak about internal peace. I don't know why a lot of persons feel so afraid when I speak about internal peace. Doesn't mean religion. Maybe some persons find internal peace through religion, but not all. And I say that in education, we have to work and recognize internal peace as space in education. And I try to find interpersonal we can make a space with yoga, meditation, music, mantras, and I use it in my classroom, and it's really useful. And you start to really open the box. The other aspect is like in Latin America, we work a lot in this social political peace, and it's important. Like Alfredo said, we have to start a dialogue, but which kind of dialogue we have to start? And suggest like the active listening, like the novel communication, the assembly that we can share and build together the rules and the place. And I hear soon that we have a peace games, and I want to know more about that because I incorporate corporate games, which together try to go beyond that the competitive stuff that the games gives, but cooperative games start to work together like a new kind of relationship. And finally, the ecological piece that is like the Gaia piece is like a trying to put together all the things and how we have the relationship with the environment and how the environment is part of us and we are part of this environment too. The purpose of this is how we can put these rights of the kids in this purpose. Well, I say we cannot give that something that we don't have. Like a professor, we have to work with our internal peace. We don't finish our work with ourselves. we have a space to work with us, but at the same time give the space to the kids to work with his internal pace, internal peace. A space, I said here, peace education is the kind of space that we can build together. In the second part, in a social and political space, we can give the opportunity to the kid to start to work with his rights. Like yesterday say in the presentation of the book, a space that we can share and put together the rules, and like a professor start to share with the other professor and to share with another schools and make this web, like letter us say. If you want to build something new, we have to use the moral imagination. And for the moral imagination, we have to have the risk, we have to use the creativity, and we have to make the webs. And in that web, we have to include everybody until the person we call enemies. Because he believes we don't have enemies. We create the imagination of enemies. But either then, we have to integrate. That's the reason the formal school, we don't have to take it out. Because it's true, the majority of the work of peace education is through NGOs. In Mexico, it's in that way, and I think in the majority of the cases. But formal education have this opportunity to work in that. And the Gaia perspectives mean like to make a really big web that include in the formal education the relationship with NGOs. I think the school now have to be open of this all opportunity with NGOs, with the official institution, UNESCO. There are hundreds of projects that we can include and work together. I think this is important change that we can do. And I was working on one project called A World Made with Peace. And you can see like 11 pictures that it's a project which traveled for 11 countries. It's a project which made it with a professor, with a one professor from Morocco. We start to share first letters, and after we say, well, how we can show that the Arabic world is not only terroristic world, no? And we decide, okay, maybe the kids can say what they believe about peace. And start Mexico to draw what does the kid believe about peace. And the Moroccan kid start to draw what does mean peace. And we send the draws to the both country and show what the kids want to say. But not only show the picture, we put like behind them one letter to say that what the kid wants to say with the draw. And after that, only with professors, without finance, without money, start to travel for 11 countries, to Bolivia, Colombia, Peru, USA, Spain, Paraguay, Brazil, and I want only to finish. I want that you see the in the middle is one from Colombia that is like this, the typical draw with one kid, and it's from one kid from 6 years old, and the kid put behind that picture, for me peace is to go to make PP and don't feel afraid. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Gloria, for your passionate presentation on your work with teachers in peace education. And now, for our last speaker, Kurgat.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
All right. As you heard, my name is Bernard Kurgat from Kenya. I'm a teacher trainer, and currently I work at Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. Now, there was a communication breakdown in the first place. I was supposed to present this paper, but when I sent an abstract and requested for comments, nobody gave me the comments, so I thought I was not presenting anything. So I came with nothing. Actually, behind that presentation, there is nothing more. So I'll discuss based on my experience. And also when I didn't have, I was denied a visa to come to Hungary, so I had given up. But later through their effort, they talked to their embassy and I managed to get the visa. So in fact, when I was coming, I came as a participant and to just participate. But I was told yesterday, now, you are in the program. I wish they had sent me a program before so that I could prepare. So what I had been asked What I need us to discuss was on balancing values, norms, and community structure. And I would discuss based on the work we do in the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. I must explain that Kenya is a republic, and we got independence in 1963 from the British people or from Britain. And at the beginning, we were learning the British curriculum, even the government of Britain, I think, or something like that. But with time, things have changed. And we have had three presidents. The first two were a bit difficult. They were not allowing the learning of human rights in our curriculum or in schools. But after 2002, multi-party election, a democratic kind of election was done, a new government came in, and through that, our organization, which is Kenya National Commission on Human Rights, was established under the Act of Parliament, 2002, which gave us powers now as a commission to really look into human rights issues. And so far, our organization, the commission, we have done so much on human rights. There are many areas we have looked at. One is the infusion and integration of human rights in the school's curriculum. Currently, if you go to our curriculum, through the efforts of our organization, the schools or children in schools learn human rights and democracy. They learn peace and reconciliation. However, they are not comprehensive enough. For example, in English, we normally, I don't know, we call it, you bring in a composition on human rights or a peace and reconciliation topic. But in subjects like social studies, we have managed to make sure that we have proper topics on human rights, democracy, etc. Another area where the commission has done very well is on human rights clinic. We have what we call human rights clinic, where we normally visit schools to talk to children on various issues on human rights. One of them, as you are told, we have a problem in our country in relation to female genital mutilation, especially where I come from. I come from a Kalenjin community or ethnic group, where I can give you an example. In 2002, I was teaching in a high school, but in the high school, we had schools next to, primary schools next to our school. Out of 89 girls, okay, in that village, 89 girls underwent female genital mutilation, or they were circumcised, let me put it. Out of 89, 83 got married immediately. Why? Because the value, people value marriage than even what? Education. So what happens now? Because we have tried as a commission also to ensure that legislation are brought into place. So we have legislation, but to put this legislation into practice is another thing, isn't it? So what happened now is that there was a case in that 2002, 83 underage girls below 18. We know children in our constitution are children from 18 years and below. Now what happened was that these young men married girls below 18 years, which is an offense. These parents allowed their girls or daughters to be circumcised, which is a human rights violation. Now, us as the commission, what do we do? One, are you going to put in all the men who have married these young girls? Is it possible in the whole village? Are you going to arrest the parents who have allowed their daughters who are under 18 to be circumcised or to be, what happens now? That is a difficult situation. So you see there is that idea that you must be circumcised or kind of so that you become a woman and become a person who can be married. But in that process, there was a problem. You come in with the politics. The politicians themselves don't want these people to be arrested because they can give them what? The votes, isn't it? So the value of marriage, norms, and these other issues bring in a problem. So what have we done as a commission in that line? What we have done through the partnership with civil societies, faith-based organizations, we have started a program called Human Rights Clinic and Awareness in different strategic areas, which are these problems of female genital mutilation. We have introduced what we call alternative rites of passage, where you take children, okay, they are about 14 years, girls and boys, especially girls, they are about 14 years. These alternative rites of passage, we take them again for seclusion. And in the process, we train them, okay, they'll be wearing uniform, explaining what our vision, mission is. But at the end of the day, we tell them, we seclude them for a week or 2 weeks, explaining to them what being a woman is, what is the negative impact of female genital mutilation. And through that, we discuss with them until they understand why they don't need to undergo this process. Because one, it's a human rights violation. But there are some traditionalists who still insist that these school children have to undergo that female genital mutilation. So what we do, we again call them and do what you call public human rights awareness, where you invite the parents, you invite the teachers, you invite the provincial administration, the community leaders. We come and discuss how we can see or look at how we can try to alleviate this problem. But one of the major cause of this human rights violation in relation to child rights and early marriages is poverty. Most of our communities see the young children or young girls as a form of wealth. The moment they get married, you have 12 cows, 15 animals, goats, because we have them. So through that, you find that some parents see it as a way of acquiring what? The wealth. So they encourage marriages to be done at an early age, which is not a norm, it's normal, according to my culture or other neighboring cultures. But you see the government has been coming in. So through that, we have been having those human rights awareness, civic education. Another area where our organization has tried to look into in relation to human rights and some norms and values is legal reforms. We have set a program called, we have a program which does review the legislations in a country. So when there is any new bill to be passed in parliament in relation to child education, children education, we have officers from our commission who are supposed to participate in the review of that legislation. So what happens is they make sure that whatever comes out will meet our standards or will have reflected some of the human rights values we want to teach our people. Now, some of the ways also we have worked with the policymakers is by lobbying the parliamentarians to try, and in all their things they are doing, they have human rights being reflected in their legislation. And even last year we were in Sweden with the sponsorship from the Swedish government with the members of parliament to go and try to make them understand the human rights principles and how they can apply these human rights principles in their work. Apart from their work, how they can reflect it in the educational policies, because they are the ones who make the policies for the government. So through them, we have been trying to influence them to see that children issues or children rights issues are reflected. When they are making their policies, we have been trying to make them be part of us. When they are making their policies, they at least understand what are the principles of human rights and how they are going to reflect them in their curriculum, in their policy making process. However, we have been having challenges, same like child labor. We have the pastoralist communities who never allow their children to go to school because they want them to do what? To take care of their animals. So they move from place to place trying to transfer the animals, looking for water, pasture, So what have we done as a commission with the Ministry of Education? We have been lobbying also the Ministry of Education to try to understand that these children need to go to school. So we have introduced through the Development Partner Support, UNICEF, the mobile schools, which we are targeting certain regions. And our organization as the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights has played a greater part in participating in all those processes. Now, you find that our commission also is a watchdog, has a watchdog role and advisory role to the government. We advise them where necessary, but when we see they are not, then we work on them, we talk to them, we can demonstrate as an organization to make them understand what we want. So we have been having various challenges in terms of trying to implement our programs, especially on the rights of the children. One is that when you talk seriously against what they are doing, they start reducing our payment. I mean, they are the ones who are funding our programs in relation with also support from development partners. So like last year, we had reduction of several millions because they want to punish us for trying to do what? To talk against what they are doing, which is not democratic. So through that, when we talk against them, they reduce our payment. I mean, the funds they give to the commission. When we are very friendly, they increase the funds. So what we do, we have to balance between seeing that all these things are balanced and then we work with them. Another issue in this region we have with the children is illiteracy. In some places, children don't go to school, some regions. And some of you who have come to Kenya, you may have seen some regions like Turkana. I have talked with some of you and you have been to Nyanza, Turkana, hardship area where children don't go to school. So how do you make them understand the child rights and the rights of the children? So what we have done as a commission, we have come up with a popular version of our act. Of course, the act of the Children's Act is there. So what we have done is produced simple, this booklet, the small one, which talks about the rights of the children, what you are supposed to do. You read on your own and you try to understand what it is. And when we go to see them, to visit them, we carry this act, discuss with them slowly by slowly so that they try to understand this thing. And with that, I hope we are kind of making some impact as an organization. I have also some of the write-ups on what we do as an organization. I'll put them there. Then you can read on your own. If you have further questions, we'll discuss. Otherwise, I'll go and make a presentation, a proper, what do you call it, PowerPoint presentation, which I'll send to you later. Otherwise, I'll give like that.